Good morning, human rights activists all over the world. Welcome back to Communication Workers of America, CWA, Human Rights Hour Power, a Justice Field Hour of Talk, Solidarity, and Worker Power right here on KYOK Radio, 1140 AM and the all-new 106.5 FM. If you are visiting the beautiful city of Houston, you can take us home with you on kyokradio.org. Listen and subscribe to us every Thursday morning at 10 a.m. Central, 11 a.m. Eastern, and 8 a.m. Pacific time on kyokradio.org or the CWA Strong app or your favorite podcast player, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, YouTube Music, iHeartRadio, and Podchaser. Search for CWA Hour of Power on your favorite podcast player. Thank you for joining us on the CWA Human Rights Hour Power Radio Show this morning. It's about us. That's right. It's about us. Working agreement, solidarity, living wages, worker power, and simply human rights. Honk your horns if you support workers. We have a phenomenal show lineup with Mykia Jones, Sir Reginald Small, Timmy Wiley, Tay Atkins today. So don't you dare change that dial. We're going to be talking about mental health check-in and rejuvenation for human rights activists, spotlighting our own Reginald Small, T. with Tay, staying visible and informed in an era of media censorship. And not only that, but we will also be delving into the invisibility of the agricultural workers. Then we will have the Union Buster of the Week. Our union voices are ringing in every district from Alaska to Maine, Texas, to Minnesota, Canada, to Puerto Rico, because we don't play at CWA. Our union brothers, sisters, and siblings at the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette have been outside for months striking on the picket lines. And yet while they are striking, they are still churning out the news with facts for you and me. Let's show our support to them by making sure we subscribe to unionprogress.com. And once you have subscribed to unionprogress.com, that free publication, how about going over and donating to their strike fund at cwa.org/ppg-donate? And I just heard someone shout, "When we fight, we win." You are correct. In the heart of Alabama, nestled within the small town of Brighton, a visionary chemist, inventor and educator was born, Dr. Dennis W. Weatherby. Though his name may not be as widely recognized as some historical figures, his contributions to science, industry, and the advancement of Black students in STEM are undeniable. Dr. Weatherby was not only a scientist and inventor, but also a university administrator and advocate for minority success in higher education. His work spanned multiple industries, from pioneering innovations in household products to increasing Black representation in engineering programs. His impact is not just a footnote in history, it is a legacy that continues to inspire. Dennis Weatherby was born on December 4th, 1959, in Brighton, Alabama, the son of Willie and Flossie Mae Weatherby. He attended Midfield High School, Go Patriots, before pursuing higher education at Central State University in Wilberforce, Ohio, where he earned a bachelor's degree in chemistry in 1982. From there, he continued his studies at the University of Dayton, Ohio, earning a master's degree in chemical engineering in 1984. With his education and passion for innovation, Weatherby entered the corporate world as a process engineer for Procter & Gamble in Cincinnati, Ohio, where he could go on to make groundbreaking contributions to the world of consumer products. While at P&G in the 1980s, Weatherby worked with a team that revolutionized dishwashing detergents. At the time, many dishwashing detergents left stains on dishes due to the dyes used in their formulations. His research led to a breakthrough chemical formula that made it possible for detergents containing bleach to have a lemon yellow color that would not stain dishes. The innovation became the foundation for modern lemon-scented cleaning products. On December 22, 1987, he was awarded U.S. patent number 4,714,562, along with co-inventor Brian J. Russell, for their automatic dishwasher detergent composition, which remains a core component of today's household cleaning products. In addition to his work on Cascade, Dr. Weatherby also played a pivotal role in the development for Tide with Bleach, another household staple that combined bleach with detergent to whiten and brighten the clothes without damaging colors. His contributions to consumer products have had a lasting impact on the way millions of households clean their dishes and clothes. Despite his success in the corporate world, Dr. Weatherby was passionate about increasing Black representation in science, technology, engineering, and mathematic fields. He understood the barriers that Black students faced in pursuing careers in engineering and science, and he dedicated much of his career to mentorship, recruitment, and retention of minority students in higher education. After leaving PNG, he worked briefly with Whitaker Corporation, a division of Morton International, before returning to his alma mater, Central State University, in 1989. As an academic advisor and recruiter in the Water Resources Center, he helped grow the program's students' enrollment by more than 400%, with an 80% retention rate, a remarkable achievement for a program dedicated to Black students. He later became an assistant professor of water quality at CSU and continued his mentorship efforts. In 1996, Dr. Weatherby joined Auburn University as the founding director of its Minority Engineering Program, MEP. His leadership transformed Auburn into one of the top universities for graduating African Americans in engineering. The program's success was clear. Minority first-year engineering students had a mean GPA of 2.70 after three academic quarters, compared to 2.56 for white students. Nearly 79% of minority students met the GPA requirements to advance in the engineering program, compared to just under 70% of white students. Weatherby also chaired external programs, such as the Undergraduate Science Symposium, which showcased student research from six colleges and universities. His efforts helped elevate the status of Black students in engineering, ensuring that they had the support, resources, and opportunities necessary to succeed. In 2004, Dr. Weatherby became Associate Dean of the Graduate School at the University of Notre Dame, continuing his mission to uplift and empower minority students. 2 years later, he took on the role of Associate Provost for Student Success at Northern Kentucky University, a position he held until his untimely passing on September 15, 2007. Throughout his life, Dr. Weatherby was a champion for Black students in STEM, ensuring that future generations had access to the resources and mentorship needed to thrive. What makes this story even more personable for CWA Local 3902 in Birmingham, Alabama, is that Dr. Dennis W. Weatherby is the brother of one of our own, Miss Valisa Williams. His legacy is not just a story in the history books. It is a part of our Union family. Just as Dr. Weatherby broke barriers in STEM, Ms. Williams continues to fight for equity, justice, and workers' rights within our labor movement. This connection serves as a reminder that greatness is born in our communities and that our families hold untold stories of Black excellence and achievement. As we celebrate Black History Month, we proudly recognize Dr. Dennis W. Weatherby for his extraordinary contributions to science education and advocacy for Black students in STEM. His patents and innovations revolutionized household products. His mentorship and leadership changed the landscape of Black success in engineering. His dedication to education empowered countless students. Brighton, Alabama may be a small town, but it has produced giants like Dennis Weatherby, whose impact reaches far beyond state lines. His journey is a powerful reminder of the importance of representation, mentorship, and breaking barriers. To Ms. Valisa Williams and the Weatherby family, we honor your brother's contributions and thank you for sharing his incredible story with us. His legacy reminds us that Black history is being made every day and that the fight for excellence, equity, and representation continues in all fields, including our labor movement. Rest in power, Dr. Dennis W. Weatherby. Your legacy lives on. You're tuned into KYOK 1140 AM and the all-new 106.5 FM. If you're on the go, you can take us with you on kyokradio.org or listen and subscribe to us every Thursday at 11 a.m., 8 a.m. Pacific time on kyokradio.org or the CWA Strong app, your favorite podcast player, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, YouTube Music, iHeartRadio, and Podchaser. Search for CWA Hour of Power on your favorite podcast player. Up next, we have Makia Jones discussing Black History Month, mental health check-in, and rejuvenation for human rights activists. Good morning, Makia.
Good morning, Aaron. Good morning, KYOK radio listeners. And my best Angela Bassett voice. How y'all doing? Y'all good? I know it's been a bit rough for us activists these past few weeks. And we just wanted to do a monthly mental health check-in just to make sure that everybody's taking care of themselves. I know that there's been a lot of things going on in the news around the world when it, you know, wildfires, plane crashes, just different rights and repeals being rolled back. And I just wanted to make sure that with everything that's going on outside, that we're taking care of ourselves inside. So first, I want us to acknowledge the exhaustion. Burnout is real. Fatigue is real. And yes, rage fatigue is a thing. So recognize it, name it, and don't feel guilty about it. Reclaim your energy with intentional rest. Rest is not a reward. It's a necessity. And, you know, sometimes things outside of us want us to stay drained and tired and, you know, not at our best. So it's always good to get rest. So unplug, prioritize your sleep and yourself. I, for one, am a napper. I am a certified nap queen and I haven't had a nap in a while and I need to get one. So if you're a nap queen like me, get your naps in. And if you're not, welcome to the kingdom. Get your naps in. Next, connect with your community and others that are like-minded and share the same values and interests as you. You're not alone, and it's good sometimes to just meet with people and just have conversations and get things out. That's also a good way of taking care of yourself. Set boundaries for the chaos. If the news is too much for you, turn it off. If social media is too much for you, take a break. If you don't want to hear the chatter, don't, you know, just take some time for yourself and do something that's going to help you. Like feed your spirit and your mind. So read something uplifting, listen to your favorite kind of music, pray, meditate, exercise, whatever helps you recenter yourself. Go out to one of your favorite restaurants, you know, meet up with your friends and, you know, have lunch. When you're an activist, right, it's like your purpose is to fight. And I know that that sounds aggressive, but we don't mean it in that way. But your purpose is to fight. And sometimes you end up depleted because there's so many things and you just don't realize that sometimes you have to take the cape off to save yourself. So right now, when there's so many things going on with human rights, labor rights, and equity, it's not just physically draining. It's mentally, spiritually, and emotionally draining. And we have to make sure that we're recentering ourselves and focusing on what's most important, which is you and your mental health. So allow yourself to laugh, strategize and don't spiral. And then ask yourself who's pouring back into you. You're giving so much out. Make sure that you're putting something back in. You're surrounding yourself with people that's going to pour back in. We get empty, and an empty activist is an ineffective one. So just make sure that you're being poured into. So evaluate your circle. Again, make sure that you're dealing and you're surrounding yourself with people that are uplifting you and not weighing you down. Find your recharge point. Find out who or what it is that's going to help you be your best self. And check in with your support system. You don't have to. I know sometimes when we feel like we're emotionally drained or depleted, we kind of become reclusive. Like, no, reach out to your folks and the people that you enjoy and that enjoy you and share in something great. Limit your exposure to toxic people or just toxic things in general, and make sure that you stay in contact with like your mentors, your elders. And you know, a lot of times, especially in this country, we have an issue with prioritizing the elderly. We tend to forget them or remove them. And I know for me, the a lot of the best memories I have are with my grandparents and just sharing with them and listening to their stories and getting their history and hearing their silly jokes. So don't forget about them either, because they need you just as much as you need them. So remember to pour back into yourself, take time for yourself, whether it's yoga, meditation, lunch, a nap, a spa day, which I'm hoping Reginald will sponsor for me because I need one really, really bad. And just make sure that you're taking care of yourself. So that's it for me for now, but just make sure you're taking time for yourself, guys. It's gonna be all right. We're gonna get through this and stay full.
All right, we are in this together. Rest, recharge, and then back to the fight. You're listening to CWA, our power hour on KYOK 1140 AM in the all new 106.5 FM. If you're on the go, you can take us with you on KYOKradio.org. Thank you so much, Mykia, on rejuvenating ourselves. Well, guess what we have next? Somebody is in the spotlight. Sir Reginald Small is back in the spotlight seat this morning. Good morning, Reginald.
Good morning, Errol Minor, and good morning, KYOK radio listeners. I am and I remain Reginald Small, CWA activist. And oh, what a time it is to be an activist. I mean, a time like this, it makes me think, stony the road we trod, bitter the chastening rod, felt in the days when hope unborn had died. So many causes and issues that require our attention and support as activists. We are at a good point, and of course, y'all know it's my favorite point in the program to spotlight all of you listeners out there that took some time during this month, Black History Month, to support a program, learn something different, or just took some time to support some of the many causes. I would like to give a special shout out to District 6, Local 6215, for putting on a wonderful, wonderful program last night in a celebration of Black History Month. District 6 is under the leadership of Vice President Derek Olsebes. A special thanks to the organizers of that program, in which we all fully supported, Mr. David Marshall, Mr. Alex DeBlotto, Mr. Lamar Banks, and Mr. Ron Swaggerty. It was indeed a wonderful program with songs, powerful words, and a historical glimpse. With that historical glimpse, it brings me to a thought this morning where we are actually, during that program, we talked a little bit about affirmative action versus diversity, equity, and inclusion. So during Black History Month, it's a historical look back. But it should also be educational so that we can also move forward and understand the fights that we're actually engaged in today. So, a little glimpse of affirmative action. It was created to address systemic discrimination in employment and education. In 1961, JFK, John F. Kennedy, issued Executive Order 10925, which required government contractors to take affirmative action to ensure equal employment opportunities. In 1965, LBJ, Lyndon Baines Johnson, issued Executive Order 11246, which expanded on the previous order and established the Office of Federal Contract Compliance to enforce the original order. So, in a nutshell, the intention of JFK, he issued the order, but the businesses and the institutions of education did not comply with it. The second order was to actually ensure compliance. And of course, in 1968, gender was added to the protected categories. In essence, there were five five major points for with that executive order. One was to ensure that marginalized groups have equal opportunity for advancement. Also, to boost minority employment, increase the diversity of student bodies, reach out to students who may not have equal access to high quality education, and to improve the educational experience and economic outcomes for all students. I want to point out that nowhere in the 5 points did you hear me or did the order say that we had to hire or promote unqualified individuals. So to be clear, I am not mixing up affirmative action with diversity, equity, and inclusion, although very similar. But I reference the two because historically, affirmative action has been under attack since its inception. Affirmative action specifically targets underrepresented groups in hiring and education. Diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives, and I'm going to step back 1 minute. You may notice that I'm not using the acronyms of DEI. Those acronyms have been somehow politicized and used as weapons in a negative fashion. I don't know how we could look at the insurance of diversity in spaces, the consideration of equity in situations, and making all people feel included, which should be the basics of country, nation, and union. I don't know how we can turn any of that into something negative. So now it is my personal choice, and perhaps could become yours, to actually say the words, those positive words, diversity, equity, and inclusion, and stop cutting it off to make it something that's being used against us in a negative fashion. But those diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives focus on creating an inclusive environment for all employees. This includes addressing unconscious bias, promoting cultural competence, and valuing diverse perspectives. So I hope that in this little historical review that you learned something about affirmative action and diversity, equity, and inclusion today. But again, a shout out to all of you who are supporting programs and getting behind a cause this month. And I encourage you all not to just celebrate Black history, but look at all of those events that we can celebrate that are coming up. Let's celebrate women's rights. Let's celebrate pride stories. Let's celebrate Hispanic Heritage Month, Jewish American Heritage. Let's support all of those things. We can do that if you're a union. You can join and promote and support your human rights committees. If you're not, you can support organizations by Googling them in your local areas and supporting those that promote the research and preservation of history. Because regardless, I want you to know that no order, no stroke of a pen, no removal of a holiday from a Google calendar can stop us from telling our own stories. The power is indeed in our hands. And Errol, one more shout out before I turn it back over to you. I would like to again make a shout out to local CWA Local 3108 under President Steve Winooski and Equity Chair Phyllis Hancock for hosting a very impactful gender justice and implicit bias training this month in February in Orlando, Florida. Let's give a shout out to them and a big thanks to Local 3102 and Local 3176 and the Orange County Sheriff's Department for sending representatives from their department's LGBTQIA plus advocacy group. Your participation shows how vital it is for our community to stand in solidarity for gender justice. And finally, let's take a moment to honor Gary McBride, a 2005 Dennis Surrett CWA Minority Leadership Institute graduate and APRI member. Gary's continued commitment to the fight for justice and equality is inspiring, and we are proud to stand alongside leaders like him in our journey. Now back to you, Mr. Errol Minor.
All right, I'm gonna go ahead and let you get a swig of water because we're about to come right back to you, Mr. Small. We're gonna jump down to the Union Buster of the Week. I'm gonna carry it all right on back to Mr. Reginald Small, sitting
All
in
right.
for Timia Wiley.
All right. And we miss Miss Timia Wiley this morning. She couldn't be with us, but I am responsible for the Union Buster of the Week. And it is none other than Google, a colossal tech company that has once again chosen to undermine the importance of labor history, race, racial equity, and cultural awareness in our society. In a recent decision, Google announced that it would stop automatically displaying significant commemorative events such as Black History Month and Pride Month on the Google calendar. Instead, users will now be required to add these crucial holidays manually. This change is not merely an inconvenience, but we believe a deliberate action that serves to erode recognition of the profound historical and cultural events that honor the struggles and triumphs of marginalized communities. When Google justifies this decision by claiming that maintaining these events was unsustainable, it raises eyebrows. Let's face it, this is a company that collects an immense amount of data from users, tracking every search and selling targeted advertisements. If they can manage to maintain such sophisticated data systems, certainly they have the capacity to keep a simple calendar updated with cultural observances. There is a powerful message in calling out Google for their decision to remove these events from their calendar. It undermines the visibility of labor, racial equity, and cultural awareness. The connection between these observances, Black History Month, Pride Month, and the history of labor movements, civil rights struggles, and marginalized communities in the workforce is undeniable. This message also ties into the broader context of digital union busting, where corporate giants like Google can control the narratives they choose to promote or erase. So, back to my previous segment. It's a travesty that this has been done, but it doesn't stop anything. The power again is in our hand. Be aware of what is going on and the things that we can do to combat this, ensuring our calendars and communications proactively highlight these significant observances, making them visible to all, educating our members on the importance of these particular events. And holding companies like Google accountable and calling them out. At CWA, we are committed to fighting for all workers. This means recognizing and celebrating the histories that inform and empower our movements. So, congratulations, Google. You've earned the spotlight and the title of this week's Union Buster of the Week through your actions.
All right, and thank you so much, Mr. Reginald Small, for the Union Buster of the Week. Google, that's right, Google it. We are calling them out. Next up, we have the T for Tay. Good morning, Tay.
Good morning, Harold, and good morning, KYOK listeners and Union family. So, another segment with Tea with Tay, where we sip, spill, and serve the real. So, today's tea, we're diving into something that impacts all of us: media censorship. As Reginald was just stating, as far as Google taking the holidays from the calendar, they're also quietly suppressing important information that we are trying to put out as activists. We're going to dive into that and talk a little bit more. So turn your volumes up and open your ears. So the digital world is constantly evolving, whether it's Facebook, Google, Instagram, X, YouTube, TikTok, and many others that we may not name here. We use a lot of these platforms to share life experience, spread information, combat information, and get information on the latest news at times. No matter where you stand politically, access to information is essential for a functioning democracy. But what happens when certain words or phrases or discussions are quietly being controlled? So it's one thing when you know that the information that you're putting out is being banned. But when you have these big tech companies and social media gatekeepers who are in control of what message is important and what message is not, that's a concern for me. Because how can you tell me that one message should be prioritized over another? This has nothing to do with your political stance, your social stance, or anything like this. This has to do with what's right and what's fair. No one should tell us that information that we value is not important because they don't value that information. You'll notice lately on your social media platforms, or you may not notice, if you were a person who was getting a lot of engagement as far as actions that were going on in your community, or you're spreading information regarding labor rights or economic policies or social changes, you'll notice that you're not getting as much engagement. And that's not because it's not important information. That's not because people are not interested. That's because social media is shadow banning. So if you don't know what shadow banning is, that is where basically they don't tell you that your information is not getting out to everyone on your feed. They drop your information lower into your news feed. In order for people to sometimes find your post, they actually have to come to your page. But my question is, what are we really afraid of? Why are we shadow banning this information? Why are we taking social media and weaponizing it? Basically, we're not allowing people to have that freedom of speech or to spread information because, again, big tech companies or the social media gatekeepers, they don't feel like it's important for us to get our information out. So what I will tell you is we've been kind of looking into it a little bit more as far as how can we combat this? Because social media is big when it comes to getting messages out. So how can we combat when now we don't have the same freedoms as far as hashtags to connect with other labor workers or workers' rights, or again, changes that are happening? We used hashtags to connect with those people, but you notice that the hashtags are kind of like they're invisible now. You may click on a hashtag and you may see three or four posts under that hashtag, but ultimately there's thousands of posts under that hashtag. That's shadow banning people's posts. The way that we can kind of combat the shadow banning portion is you can actually use on your hashtags alternate letters, like you, so you can kind of how do you say that? I'm sorry about that. You can modify the hashtags, like you can use symbols or the spelling. If it's a O, you can put a zero, a one for an I. You can do different things like that in order to combat what's happening with the hashtags. We have to become creative, guys, because they are blocking certain hashtags right now. So in order to keep the messages going, we just got to get a little more creative with it. You can use images as well as far as getting your message out. You can post, instead of posting a post on social media, you can create a flyer. That'll also help with getting the information out. Something that I like to do is go live. You can also go live, kind of tell your storytelling, but also engage with other creators so that they can share your content. Also, make sure that you're asking family or friends questions about if they see your post in their feed. Ask them to like your post, to share your post, make sure they comment on your post, things like that. That brings it higher into the feed. So each platform, each social platform works almost the same when it comes to like hashtags. So what I would say is do I'm sorry about that, the cross post where you post something on Instagram and it goes to your news feed on Facebook. You can do things like that as well, so that then your message is on multiple platforms. So it's kind of hard to make everything that you post invisible. So you just have to post a little more, use creative language when you're posting. Stay updated on what hashtags you're noticing you don't see anymore. Stay updated on words that you have noticed are being banned or censored. When you're creating your Facebook post, the more you know about your algorithm and shadow banning, the more successful you'll be as far as getting your messages out. Even though, again, these big companies and are the gatekeepers, they're trying their best to stop it. We have ways to work around it. Keep changing your platform. Don't ever leave it the same. Change the wording as often as you can, so that you can get into other algorithms. Share positive messages so that you get those people in your algorithm and you show up in their news feeds. So basically, we're not going to spend too much time on it, but we're always going to highlight the importance of social media and how we get our messages out quicker. We want you all to stay vigilant in what's happening. We want you to know that they are suppressing what we are trying to put out, but it's up to us to fight back. It's up to us to stay informed so we know how to work around these things. If social media was not important, would they be shadow banning messages that we put on social media? Would they be concerned about the posts that you're posting on social media? That's our own platform without having to go to the news channels or anything like that. And if you use them correctly, they're a powerful source of getting out information. So that's what I'll say as far as what's happening lately, as far as shadow banning. I want us to stay on top of this again. No one can tell us that our message is not important. No one should decide which message is more important than the other. This goes for everyone. Again, there's no sides to be chosen. This is about being fair. This is about us having the opportunity to speak on things that are important to us. And it doesn't matter who doesn't understand the message again. We want our message to be out. So that's what we'll go into. We'll go into our next portion as far as the Tea with Tay segment, which would be.
Well, hold up, Tay. I got two questions real
Okay.
quick, and then we'll get into the other part of dealing with the shadow banning. My first question is, are you able to put symbols or use symbols as hashtags?
You're able to use numbers and letters, but the symbols will separate your hashtag and it'll be
Okay.
different words. So I wouldn't use symbols because it's not going to have your full message. It'll only have portions of the message.
Okay. And my second question is this morning, I know I saw an article that, or it could have been on this Facebook social media platform where they will now delete any lives that are older than 30 days. Have you seen that?
Yes, so that they've been doing that for a while. So you actually have
Okay.
the opportunity where it tells you they want to delete them. And if you don't respond to that message, they will automatically delete. But if you click on it, it will say, don't delete the live. That's what you do in order to keep your live up. Make sure you go, don't ignore the message because if it's an important live to you, I had to learn the hard way. I just kind of ignored the message and my live was completely gone. But if you click on it, it says don't delete live. So that's
Okay.
but after 30 days, they are trying to remove certain things, but they've had that up for about a couple months here.
All right. Thank you so much, Tay. And since we're talking about shadow banning, I want to move over into a piece that Makia is passionate about, and that is talking about the invisibility of agricultural workers. So at this time, we'll have Makia come back onto the mic, and she's gonna talk to us about the invisibility of agricultural workers.
Thank you guys. I thought it was really, really, really super important for us to shine a light on them and put some visibility on them, especially with everything that's going on in today's economy and in our world. Agricultural workers are the backbone of global food production, and they're often unseen despite their vital contributions to society. Their work is physically demanding and critical to the economy, but they are frequently marginalized due to systemic inequities, including exclusion from Social Security benefits and discrimination rooted in racism. So we're just gonna just have a conversation and just dive a little bit deeper into the significance of our agricultural workers, the reasons why they're overlooked, and the need for more recognition and fair treatment. When you think, as activists and as unionists and labor people, when we think about workers, we don't necessarily think about farm workers or agricultural workers. We don't think about the people that are literally making our lives what they are, like the sustainability of them. When you think about the price of the eggs right now, you think maybe about the chickens. You don't think about the farmers that's raising the chickens or taking care of the eggs or anything like that. When you think about the price of eggs and everything like that, you think about the bird flu. Are you thinking about the people that are exposed to that? So there's just so many different things that we don't consider about these people that literally make our world go round. So I just wanted to give them their flowers, just like they give us ours, really. So agricultural workers are responsible for the production of nearly all food consumed globally, and their labor sustains economies and rural communities. They ensure global food security because they provide the majority of the world's food from essential crops to meat and dairy products. They support rural economies because in many developing countries, agriculture is a primary economic activity. Agricultural workers maintain livelihoods in rural areas, contributing significantly to local markets and economies. And agricultural products make up a significant portion of global exports, and agricultural labor is central to international trade. So again, these are people that literally make the world go round that we never really talk about. And here's the reason why. There's a lack of public recognition. Many consumers are so disconnected from the sources of their food, they're often unaware of the intense labor required to produce it. And agricultural workers' daily struggles, such as long hours and low pay, go largely unnoticed. I forget the name of it, and I'll go research it and bring it back to you all next week. But there are several documentaries where you can watch and you can see how hard these agricultural workers work. Sometimes they're like literally racing against the clock, like racing from the fields, carrying all kinds of like baskets and boxes of produce, and they're literally running to get it turned in on time. And when you think about where your food come from, you don't think that. And they're also subjected to unsafe working conditions, inadequate wages, and long hours, often in dangerous environments. They're exposed to pesticides and other chemicals that are used to treat food, and their vulnerability is compounded by a lack of access to healthcare, education, and basic social rights. So these are just so a few topics that I wanted to address before we got into the conversation.
So something I actually want to kind of go back to what you said, Mikey, is a lack of recognition. So how do we not recognize people who are helping us to continue going? These are people who make sure that we have food. These are people who are daily risking their lives for pennies because honestly, Mikey, and I know this is a passion of yours, so correct me if I'm wrong. They don't make very much doing this at all.
They don't. They
So
don't.
you're risking your life to make sure that others have healthy food options, and people don't even recognize you. People don't even fight for you and the challenges that you face. I think that's something that we really need to look into. We need to understand what the people who are actually making, and not saying that everyone's not making sacrifices who are working and helping build our country, but the people who are putting literally food on the shelves for us, we need to look into their needs as well. And I was recently speaking to a driver, and she was telling me how everything has kind of gone dry. There's not many people out working or picking the food or anything like that. And she was saying that her concern is that if we don't have many people who are able to go and do that anymore, then what happens to that food that has been growing? Does it not rot?
You're right, it does.
It goes to waste. So those are things that I'm realizing happening with all of the changes. I'll say that as well. The changes happening as of recent as well, the new actions and what we were talking about last week, the policies and actions, it also affects the agriculture workers as far as what they're doing and how they're able to go out and make a living for themselves. So again, I just noticed that that's something that we probably don't recognize or even think about at all.
Well, I don't want to jump too far ahead, but I do have a question. So, if the agricultural workers are invisible, they have low wages. Are they even investing in Social Security, or they to this day, or what?
So I'm glad that you brought it up. So originally, back in 1935, when the Social Security Act first, came out, they were excluded, and they were excluded as a result of political decisions rooted in a mix of economic interest and racial discrimination. And as a result, many agriculture workers have been denied retirement security, unemployment insurance, or access to other social safety nets. It really bothers me. I wanted to say I'm, peed off, but it really bothers me because, again, these are people that are doing, and I don't want to put like a hierarchy on labor, right? But these are people that are actually out there working in the sun, in the heat, in the elements, no matter what, to provide sustenance for us, right? Like, we can't live without food. And I don't know about you, but I don't have a green thumb. I will kill a cactus, and I have. Okay. So, I can't, like, I, you know what I mean?
Not
Like,
a cactus.
I have, and we need these people to survive. And so, the fact that, our government and our society excluded them when they're really like the base of our survival. Is insane to me. But yeah, so at one point they did not they were not able to put into Social Security, which causes the lack of funds. So it's like, you're stuck in a place where there's no generational wealth, there's no help, because even as you get older and you go to retire, there's nothing there for you. And I can't imagine working that long and that hard and having all that, that strenuous work on your body, again, mentally and physically, and then getting to an age and you have nothing to fall back on. And like, again, the society that you've supported literally with your bones does not value enough to include you in that social safety net. I know Reginald has a lot to say about this.
Well, let me ask something, because I just want to clarify and confirm. So the agricultural workers to this day aren't able to put into Social Security. Is that correct?
No, that's incorrect. So there have been some
Okay.
adjustments. So there
Okay. All
have
right.
been some adjustments. So basically, you have to pay, and this is where the world is, the way that it is. So basically, you have to like pay taxes and certain things in order to be put into Social Security. Now, when it comes to modern day agricultural workers and the situation that we have now, a lot of our produce and agricultural work, agriculture, sorry, comes from different countries. And so it remains a significant issue because a lot of our migrant workers who face xenophobia, lower wages, and poor living conditions compared to other sectors, sometimes they're not even considered employees of the United States, if that makes sense. And they don't pay taxes. So again, you're getting this labor from these people. They're living in these, unhealthy, crazy conditions. They're not being paid fair wages or living wages or anything like that. And then they also don't get, again, to reap the benefits of any social safety nets, even though they're pouring into them in some way. So this is why they shouldn't be overlooked, because, for me, and a lot of people don't want to get into this, but for me, agricultural workers, it just really resembles like slavery to me a lot of times, like the way that they're treated and unsupported. And it's really disheartening, because we as society always look at whoever like the richest person is or whoever the boss is as like the most important. And we don't identify with the fact that if we don't have agricultural workers, if we don't have, people out here making sure that, we have safe and healthy food and clean water. And, for me, because I'm a first world kind of, a first world kind of girl, like we need people to maintain these things. We need people that are, taking care of our plumbing and our electricity and carpenters and all these things. We need these people. These people are the real true backbones of our society. And we ignore them as if they don't have that significance of the CEO. And it's like, let me tell you something. If something happens to my house with my plumbing, the person that actually comes from Roto-Rooter to my house to fix it is more important than the CEO to me.
Gotcha.
And we need to identify and celebrate these people and stop excluding them. Like, I don't know how else to say it, but I just feel like they're excluded. And they're never, whenever, again, whenever you think labor, you think workers, and even as a unionist, you think about all these things, we really tend to kind of overlook and forget our agricultural siblings.
Yeah. And that's why we must dismantle discriminatory systems that perpetuate this exploitation. And one of the things that we also have to remember is when we are hiring individuals to do things around our homes, whether it is gardening or doing lawn work, we have to make sure that we are paying them fairly as well. Because we don't want to mistreat anyone. One of the things that I often say, if you have a housekeeper and it is an immigrant, make sure that you are paying them fairly and correctly. Because we don't want to go back to those old days where we are not paying fairly. We don't want to treat someone unfairly when it comes to wages.
You know, Harold, as we're sitting here and we're having this discussion, I'm actually thinking about our environmental justice training and how the agricultural workers are affected, and how we can actually teach people the importance of environmental justice and also how it affects the agricultural workers. When we talked about in environmental justice training, heat protection. When Mikeia was just talking about the workers, they're out there. And we know because of that training that many states don't have heat protection. So that means that they're suffering as well because they don't
And I
have
think it was Arizona that took it away, right?
Arizona was one of the states who doesn't cover heat protection. And as an Arizonian, I don't know how we say that, Arizonan, I know that they are wrong for that. It is 120. 120 plus degrees in the summertime, and I see people out there working construction with hard hats and boots on and all of that. How you can't take heat protection from the they, we need these kind of protections, because if they pass out or if something happens, how are we going to support their families when they were just out there building for us? So I just feel like environmental justice training, culture workers, all of this is all tied in together. It always ties in together, but this all ties in together. We have to fix our environment. We have to fix the laws to assist agriculture. I'm sorry, and I keep saying it like that. The workers, we need to work on a lot more, because You actually don't know the full effects unless you sit down and you get certain trainings or you learn about what's happening in different states. You know what's happening in your state sometimes, but I think that's important. And like I said, as soon as we started talking about heat protections and working environments, environmental justice is the first thing that came to my head.
Coming to my mind too, that's good you pointed out environmental justice, but of course, in the other part, this is such a broader conversation because I mean, I think that immigration is part of this conversation, the broken in, and I'll just put it, the broken immigration system and the need now that we feel that we have to do things, taking drastic measures, I believe is actually causing some of our workers to actually become victimized because they don't want to report certain things out certain problems. So it's a broader conversation that we probably need to come back to revisit this a little bit more in detail and in segments.
You're absolutely correct because in Florida, the fields are barren right now of workers, that is. Makia, thank you so much for bringing this subject to us, the invisibility of agriculture workers. And thank you, Tay, this morning for the tea with Tay. You're listening to the Communication Workers of America, CWA Human Rights Hour Power, a Justice Field Hour of Talk, Solidarity, and Worker Power right here on KYOK 1140 AM and the all-new 106.5 FM. If you're on the go, you can take us with you on kyokradio.org. Listen and subscribe to us every Thursday morning, 10 a.m. Central, 11 a.m. Eastern, and 8 a.m. Pacific on KYOK 1140 AAM, KYOKradio.org, I'm sorry, or the CWA Strong app, or your favorite podcast player, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube Music, iHeartRadio, and Podchaser. As we come down to the final minutes of the show, let's not forget our union brothers, sisters, and siblings at the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. February is Black History Month and Active Awareness Month as well. Take action and learn more today. When you take time to learn about others around you, you're making the world a better place. Awareness campaigns serve as a powerful reminder that there are steps we all must take in looking out for loved ones, the people in our community, and those who have been impacted. It's a time to take one big step together and make a change. An hour is not long enough to be with you, and a week is too long to be away from you. You have been tuned into the CWA Human Rights Justice Hour Power broadcast. I hope something you heard today has inspired you to take action toward creating positive change in the world. Every person has the power to make a difference, no matter how small. And by working together, we can create a world where human rights are respected and valued. So I encourage each of you in the listening audience to reflect on your role in promoting human rights to effect change in your communities and beyond. Know that you are not alone in your quest for a more just and equitable world. When faced with injustice, it can be easy to lose hope and give up. But remember, justice may be slow, like the truth. But when it finally comes, it will stand. Until next Thursday, 10 a.m. Central Standard Time, 11 a.m. Eastern, and 8 Pacific, right here on KYOK 1140 AM and the all-new 106.5 FM, KYOKradio.org, or your favorite podcast player. See you next week.